right, good morning. My name is Karen Moore, and we're here for building a Latin program from the top down. So if you're looking for something on science or math, you are definitely in the wrong place. I know I see the disappointed expressions already. There's a reason I don't teach science and math. It would not be a pretty picture. Let's go ahead and open with a word of prayer, and then we'll get started. Lord, I thank you for this lovely morning in Dallas, Texas. I thank you for this opportunity for all of our brothers and sisters in Christ to come together to continue on that path of being lifelong learners for the purpose of training up this next generation in a manner that would glorify your name. I pray that you'd please be with us today. I pray that your Holy Spirit would be with us, that what I have to share this morning would be a blessing, a help, and encouragement to those here, and that they would be able to pass that blessing on back at their school. In the name of Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen. Okay, well, as I said, my name is Karen Moore. I'm here to talk to you about building a Latin program from the top down. I'm actually the Latin chair at Grace Academy of Georgetown, a K-12 school just north of beautiful Austin. It's actually down I-35, south about 4 hours, if you care to drop by and visit us sometime. I'm actually also the co-author for the Latin Alive text program, which you can see at the Classical Academic Press booth. And in my spare time, I actually travel around doing a lot of teacher training and consulting with schools regarding their Latin programs. And in that last capacity is the way I'm really approaching today. A lot of times I receive questions about your Latin program. How did you build it? Some of the common challenges that we all face, asking advice about curriculum and methodology and approach, and what do you teach where and when and how. So my thought in this talk today was to share with you my process in developing the Latin program at Grace Academy, some of the thought processes I went through, successes, failures, and some of the common challenges that I know a lot of us look at together. I know a lot of you are from schools that are already pre-existing, big, built down the road. Some of you are probably in little new schools shooting up, and some of you may still be even in the early planning stages of we're thinking about. So hopefully my prayer is that you will find something of advice and benefit in this talk to help you wherever you are on your journey. And as you can see, my email address is in the program. So if you have questions, want notes, please email me. Please stop by the Classical Academic Press booth. I'll be hanging out there, and I'm more than happy to continue the conversation with you. All right, so a little bit about where I'm from. Again, Grace Academy is a K-12 school. We require Latin in grades 3 through 9, with 9th grade being a Latin literature reading course. I actually arrived at the school in 2002. At that point in time, the school was only a year old in its official schooldom phase. It had been before that a group of homeschool families into a co-op, as I know a lot of our schools started. And I recall sitting in 2002 around the kitchen table of our then headmaster, and they were naive enough to say, well, Karen, what kind of a Latin program would you build? What do you think Latin should look like at our school? And they pretty much put that ball in my lap. Now, I was very blessed in that these gentlemen had been studying classical education, had been students of classical education for the past 5 years, going to conferences, working it out, and they had a real appreciation for the role that Latin needed to play in a classical school. So they wanted a vibrant Latin program. They wanted a strong Latin program. But at the same time, their background was not language, was not Latin, and the question was, how do we do this Latin thing? And that was the question that was put before me. So as I'm thinking about this school in its infancy, which was at the time a K-12 school of probably less than 50 students, and thinking, wow, okay, where do we go from here? And I'm a planner. I'm a real planner. I don't do last minute spontaneous very well. So as I'm thinking about this, I realize the question is not about the now for a couple of 4th and 5th grade students. I realize the question is more about the vision, the end. What is Latin going to mean for Grace Academy? And that's why I call this title, this workshop, Building a Latin Program from the Top Down. I want to encourage you that wherever you are, stop and take time to consider, what is it that Latin is supposed to mean at my school? And that's going to be a little bit different for a lot of us. I don't think there's one right answer necessarily, although certainly you will certainly hear my answer predominantly in this talk because I'm talking to you about where I'm coming from. We have a catchphrase, or a catchword, I really should say, in classical education. You hear the word telos thrown out a lot. It's a Greek word that means achievement, attainment. In Greek culture, it oftentimes means the winning post or that goal, that finish line that you're striving toward. It can also mean the full realization of a goal, and I like that meaning. Because we're talking about Latin programs, I also threw in the word finis. Now, most of you, if you're not familiar with Latin, you've seen finis at the end of these great old movies or classic Bugs Bunny cartoon clips. And as I tell the students, look, Latin, Bugs Bunny knew Latin. It's got to be cool. Finis also means end, a purpose. And I like the definition that I read in Oxford Latin Dictionary that said it's an end in view. That was my favorite meaning. Okay, it's the end that I have in view, not the nebulous end out there somewhere that I'm going to stumble upon, but the end that I have in view that I know I'm striving towards. And so that's the question for you. Your telos, your finis, is why are you studying Latin? Why should students study Latin at your school? What is their telos? What is their finis? What is the end view, that full realization of Latin? So as I'm wrestling with this question, I ask myself, why did the ancients study Latin? Why did the men of the Renaissance period study Latin? Why did our founding fathers study Latin? Why did men of our own modern age, like C.S. Lewis, want to study Latin and become so proficient in it? Was it because they wanted to build their English vocabulary and grammar? I'm thinking in the Renaissance and ancient world, probably not. Was it just so that they could have some really cool Latin chants? They are very cool. Or cool Latin t-shirts. There's a good goal. Maybe to have a conversation in Latin? Some yes, some no. At the end of my mulling this over, I came to the conclusion that the purpose for studying Latin that we could relate to today the most was reading Latin. It wasn't just to build vocabulary and grammar. It wasn't just to learn all the cool ways that Latin integrates with the world around us. But at the end of the day, they wanted to read the great books in the language in which they were written, because they realized how much meaning is lost in translation. So that became my telos, my finis, to read authentic Latin literature. That was going to be the purpose of my program. Now, of course, in fourth grade Latin, that is not going to be realized. But that was going to be my destination point. And so I crafted this mission statement. The Latin program at Grace Academy aspires to train students to construe original Latin texts in order to decipher the design and intent of the author, thereby enabling them to apply these same skills to the rhetoric of their own language or any other they should choose to study. I love this word construe because it means more than just to translate. It means to interpret, to get to the down, dirty, bottom line meaning of it. And that's what I wanted them to do. I'm not naive enough to think that my kids are going to graduate from Grace Academy and go on to careers in Latin or go speaking Latin, you know, have conversations with the Pope. I don't think that's going to happen. They might not study Latin much further than Grace Academy, but I want them to have an understanding of what it means to read in another language, to have to get to the bottom of what is the wisdom that is being passed on here? What is the style? What does the word choice have to do with this passage? So again, if you look under on your outline, literature ended up becoming my telos. Why would students have studied Latin in the past ages? I believe it was to read the very words of Cicero and Virgil, who were masters of prose, poetry, sarcasm. To read the Latin fathers, such as Tertullian, Augustine, Aquinas, and Calvin. To read ancient documents, or even not so ancient documents, historical documents such as the Magna Carta, or Newton's Principia, his three laws of motion set down in Latin. So my telos was learning Latin to read Latin literature. And thus, what we set as the capstone of our program in ninth grade is a Latin literature class, which I often refer to as a humanities class in Latin. It's a year where we just read a great variety of texts, authentically Latin texts from different time periods, different backgrounds, some science, some humanities, some history, some philosophy, some poetry, some prose, so that students really come to a banqueting table to feast upon these great books, some in whole, some in part, of this Latin benefit that they've learned. All the other classes in our program either build toward or complement this goal, and I think that's key. Once you've determined your goal, just the same way as when you're building a school, you know, you look at what is my senior student going to look like? What kind of a graduate do we want to produce? Okay, what kind of a Latin graduate do I want to produce? And every class needs to somehow work towards complement that goal. Advanced placement is another goal that some schools often put as their top class. And if you've, I believe it's been mentioned in the booklet, if not in my blog site or my website, we actually do offer AP Latin in 10th or 11th grade. So I do offer it, but it's not my capstone. I certainly don't require it. I do that for a number of reasons. First of all, not everybody is going to be up to the speed of translating 1,800 lines of Virgil in 1 year, plus all the sight reading you have to do, literary analysis. It is an intense course. It's an intense reading course. I happen to love Virgil, but it is an intense course, and I don't believe that every student should be required of it. But the other reason why I don't require it, the other reason I don't view that as my capstone, I view that as the icing on the cake, you know, the extra mile. If you really like Latin, you want to keep going, we can do AP. And certainly there's great benefit in it. You read the Virgil and now Caesar. A lot of times you have the opportunity to earn college credit for it. So there are a lot of great benefits to AP, and I'm definitely a promoter of the program. But it's not my telos. It's not what I'm striving for. As much as I love Virgil and I appreciate Caesar, you have to ask yourself, is this the most valuable literature for my school, for my students to be reading? So think larger about your school as a whole, your philosophy, your worldview. If I want my students to read, to learn Latin, to read the great books, what great books is it most important for them to get snippets of, to get at least samplings of, in the original language? And I am a huge Virgil's Aeneid fan, and I definitely put a little bit of that in the class. But there are other things I want them to read. I want them to wrestle with some of Luther and his 95 Theses. I want them to see Lewis in his Latin letters. I want them to read a portion of the Magna Carta and get a feel for this history that happened and the language that encapsulated it. So again, while AP Latin is a great benefit, it was never going to be my endpoint because I wanted something broader than that. I wanted something that complemented the education they're getting, that reflected, mirrored the humanities studies that they were learning about. And I know they're going to study the history of Martin Luther. I know they're going to read the Chronicles of Narnia. So to read something by these same authors is a great benefit to them. It complements the education they're getting. And so that, again, is why I chose the Latin Lit as my telos. I meet a number of teachers from schools that tend to put in a two-year token Latin program. Because we're classical schools, so we have to have Latin. But we're not too sure about this Latin thing. We don't feel like we're completely equipped for the Latin thing. So we'll just do 2 years. We'll do a derivative study, and we'll keep going. Well, first of all, please understand that I love derivative studies. I love words. I love etymology. And I think there is a tremendous benefit to talking about English as it connects to Latin. I think there are two pitfalls on either side of the road we can fall into. We can do the Latin is only for derivatives, and thus we miss the richness of the literature we could read if we pressed on a little bit farther. But then we can also say, well, Latin for Latin's sake only. We're going to read it, eat it, sleep it, breathe it, all of that. And we're never going to connect it to English. And then you miss the great benefit of expanding your English vocabulary and understanding grammar and syntax better, of applying Cicero's arguing techniques to an English composition, or Virgil and Catullus's poetry to English poetry, and studying Tennyson, how often Tennyson copied these other artists. So I tend to go the middle road, as Ovid said. The middle way is best. So I wouldn't make it my end goal, but neither would I disregard it, because derivative study is one of the ways you can very instantaneously, even as young as third grade, encourage students and parents about the benefits of Latin, which is something I'm going to get to in a little bit, as one of our challenges is keeping our parents gung-ho about Latin. All right, now, if I was to liken this presentation to a road trip, and I love road trips, we've established our destination. You've established your telos, where you're going to go. So the next question is how to get there. Now, you have to understand, coming from where I am, where I live, I love road trips because I believe that getting there is half the fun. I want to leave early and drive leisurely and stop and smell the roses and read the historical markers and take my time really exploring the lay of the land. My husband is an engineer from IBM. He looks at his watch and says, it takes us 3 hours to get there. We'll allow 3 hours and 5 minutes, thus one potty break, and whoosh, we're down the road. Okay, little different approach. So when I'm determining my path for the journey and how to get from beginning to end, I'm going to be building in that time to stop and smell the roses and not be rushing to get through a textbook and rushing to get done and finished. I want to enjoy the journey. So where to begin? Sayers, in her essay, suggests that we start in the grammar school. And indeed, this advice is very wise, as you can take great advantage of the excitement of these young students. Oh my goodness, how much I love teaching third grade Latin, because they are so excited, and they're vibrant, and they're energetic. And their memory capacity is amazing. And I think that we're almost foolish not to take advantage of that if we can. So I really do agree with Ms. Sayers that we should start in the grammar school. I caution against beginning Latin study before they have really cemented their foundation of English grammar. In other words, I want them to be able to not just read an English sentence, but identify subject, verb, direct object, just the basic nuts and bolts. Because again, my telos is reading, and so I'm going to want to get them to reading as quickly as possible. So in my mind, third or fourth grade is really the ideal place to begin. Now, some schools begin earlier, and I certainly have no problem or objection to that. That's just where we've chosen to put our starting point. The next point on the outline would be the focus for each stage of learning. As you're going down your road, you have to know the lay of the land and how to navigate each town you come to and through and around. So think about the stages of learning. For those who begin in the pre-poly stage, you'll want to focus on words, songs, colors, numbers, things you can do orally, because they're not going to be able to do the writing and the reading quite that quickly. One teaching tool I love for this age, and actually for the grammar stage as well, are the diglot stories. Diglot is Greek for two-tongue, so it's an English story with Latin words inserted. I actually read a fascinating article about a gentleman who taught Russian in kindergarten this way. He would come in every day and tell them a Russian folk story, and he kept adding in more and more Russian words. And by the end of the year, he was telling the story almost entirely in Russian because he kept reusing some similar words. So it'd be something along the lines of, a puella walked in silva and saw flores. And then as they learn more words, you can insert more Latin words. You can certainly bring in visual and hand motions and things like that. And that's a really fun way to train their ear and also work on their memorization so they're already putting words into context. I really caution against just memorizing word lists in isolation. First of all, that is just boring. And secondly, they're going to learn it better if they can apply it to something. So continue to do that. In third through fifth grade, the focus is going to be more on writing because they're able to do that. We're going to focus on memorization and grammar and vocabulary, but all towards the purpose of reading. So once again, the curriculum that's out there that just has them memorize a bunch of vocabulary words in a paradigm and never the twain shall meet, I have a difficult time with, to be quite honest, because I see that these kids, even in third grade, they can put a noun and a verb together and form a sentence, and they love it. They love it, and they get so excited. We make a big deal about it. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want you to know that this is a moment. You just read your first Latin sentence. And they're so proud of themselves because they understand it. So please, even in the simplest form, get them to learn to read quickly. Let them put those vocabulary and grammar skills together and start to read, even simple sentences. Conversational skills. Now, my telos is not going to be to have a Latin conversation because Julius Caesar is not coming back, which is probably a good thing. But I also understand the pedagogy of the more skills you use to learn something, the better you retain it. I understand that a lot of these kids are going to want to go on and speak Spanish or Italian or some other language, and to begin developing these conversation skills in another language is going to be really helpful. So, and it's just plain fun, too. So even in third grade, I would encourage you to begin simple commands, you know? Salvete discipuli, and have them respond. Surgite, cantate first declension. Aperite libros, ad paginam, whatever number. Just simple skills that they're going to learn. I teach them how to ask to go to the bathroom in Latin, and the Latin word is latrinam, the latrine. They love that. And you have to watch for that one because suddenly everybody's going to need to go to the bathroom. But, you know, doing these simple conversations, simple skills in that grammar stage, fantastic. In 6th through 8th grade, as we get to the logic stage, we start to look at the higher levels of grammar. And this allows us the opportunity to begin reading on a more advanced level. Again, we've taught them the basics in some cute little sentences and stories. Now we can get to an advanced level, and even as early as 6th and 7th grade, more 7th than 6th, 6th they get a little snippet, but in 7th grade especially, I begin feeding them original and adapted pieces of Latin literature. I'll talk about this a little bit more in methodology, but there are a lot of curriculum out there that just do cute little stories all the way up. And that's fine and it's fun, but the biggest concern I hear from that is that they have a hard time making the transition. So no matter what you use, I would encourage you to sprinkle in some easy, authentic literature or some adapted literature so that they begin to get a feel for what that literature looks like, but also the excitement of, I'm reading something that was written 2,000 plus years ago. That's pretty cool. And again, it entices them towards that telos they're reaching for. And then, of course, in 9th grade, we arrive at our caps on our Latin literature class. And so there we see the fulfillment, the realization of our program in being able to read some wonderful pieces of literature from all across the globe and all across time. And that's just really exciting to see how this one language just united the world for so long. Math, science, history, poetry, prose. It's just so rich, so rich. All right, looking at number 4. Okay, if I'm going to liken 3 to a roadmap and planning a journey, then 4 is really the hot rod. How are you going to get there? Now, okay, a little side note. Have you seen the movie Cars, Disney's Cars? And there's a scene in there that I just love. It's the Porsche, Sally, and Lightning McQueen, and they've taken their little romantic jaunt through the waterfalls and all of that, and they're looking over Route 66. And she talks about how, she's talking to Lightning McQueen, explaining the difference, how Route 66 flowed with the land. And I love that. I like road trips. And my dream road trip is to get a 1960-something car, like Flo, back at the V8 station, and drive Route 66 with my husband. Now, I have to have Audrey Hepburn sunglasses and a scarf flowing in the wind as we go. But that would be my dream road trip. I think that would be so cool, just to flow with the land and that history. And so when I'm thinking about my hot rod for Latin class, what car I'm going to take, what path I'm going to take, I really like that idea of let's flow with the land. That's what we talk about in going with the grain of the student, okay, but also going with the grain of the subject too. So choosing the curriculum, how you're going to get down that journey. There are 3 basic methodologies. You have the grammar base, which is parts to whole. You have the inductive, which is more like whole to parts. And then you have immersive, which is whole hog. with the grammar, you often see WELOC or Jenny's are kind of the gold standards that a lot of schools use. And this is where they're teaching them very much the vocabulary, the grammar parts, and then applying that to reading, so parts to whole. Inductive, a lot of the more popular books on the market are Cambridge Latin Course, Oxford, Ecce Romani. Minimus and Solvete are some grammar school forms of those books. And they're more whole to parts, where they do a lot of inductive reasoning. Now, you can certainly do some a parts to whole approach with these books. And actually, that's the way I was taught. I was raised on Ecce, but my teacher did more of a parts to whole type instruction with it. But the point is to give them sentences, and with a little bit of grammar that they have, they're supposed to kind of inductively figure out the next step. And that's great for the logic stage. For the grammar stage, not so much. When I first started teaching at Grace, one of my first mistakes was bringing Ecce to fourth graders. Now, I love Ecce. I was raised on Ecce. I have sentimental memories of Ecce. But I realized very quickly that inductive was not going to work with grammar school students. They really need more of the parts to whole approach, which is a little bit more solid, a little bit more sure footing. Then in the logic school, they're all for the inductive mentality, and they can handle that a bit better. But in the grammar school, I found that didn't work so well. Again, these are kind of the three basic methodologies, but I don't think you have to necessarily use any one into exclusion. In fact, there are a lot of great curricula out there that can blend the two. For example, taking an inductive book and using more of a parts-to-whole approach where needed, or even occasionally throwing in sight reading, or occasionally doing an immersion day where we're just going to have a Latin day, or we have a Latin club, and sometimes we have Latin lunches, where we're going to have lunch, and we're going to talk in Latin only. No English allowed. We'll kick you out. And maybe give them a subject. We're going to talk about dogs. So, you know, think about some dog phrases. Look up a few dog words, and you can bring your dictionary, but we're going to just... No English, only Latin. So I think you don't have to do any one in exclusion. I think that you can adapt and bring them in. And really that's going to depend not just upon the book you're using, but upon the teacher. So as you're choosing a curriculum, consider what your telos is going to be, what your goal is, what you want to get to. Consider your teacher's strengths. You know, some teachers were trained very parts to whole. Never spoke Latin at all in the classroom. Maybe didn't even really read it that much. Some may have gone to these immersion workshops, and they can speak it fluently. Okay, going back to the car analogy, don't take someone who's always driven an automatic and shove them into a standard. That's a disaster waiting to happen. So consider your teacher and what their strengths are. Find a curriculum that soars with their strengths and manages their weaknesses, and encourage them to continually reach out, branch out every year. Every year I set for myself one new goal that I want to master in the next year. It might be speaking more. It might be more integration. It might be a new project. I constantly go through the year and think of a project and go, ooh, I'm going to do that next year. So make that list. Don't feel like you have to do it all at once. We're lifelong learners. Lifelong learners is a lifelong process. It's not going to be done in a year. Also consider your community and the culture of your school. What kind of things appeal to your students, your parents, your community? Are you in a tech-savvy area? Do you have a lot of science-minded people in your school? Then you might want to find some resources that really help you integrate science in your classroom. And that is bountiful. Okay. So consider those kind of things as to things you want to bring in that will encourage your program. Consider age appropriateness. WELOC is a great grammar text. Certainly would never knock it. There's a lot of great things about it. I like the parts of the whole approach. I like the fact that it brings in Latin literature from the get-go. But WELOC was written for college students. It's very, very difficult to do with middle school and sometimes even high school. I did use it for a couple years at the recommendation of a friend. And I had my A+, scored a 5 on the AP in 10th grade and a 5 on the AP chemistry in 10th grade, National Merit Scholar. Brilliant people, right? And in sixth grade, as we were going through WELOC, and they were acing the course, they said, Mrs. Moore, if you were not here to explain WELOC to us, I would be lost. And he was talking about the English, not the Latin. It was written for a college student, a college mind. So if you're going to use WELOC, be very well aware of that. Look for the resources online. Look for the tools, the materials. And I'd really exhort you not to teach it to anybody under high school age. That's my experience. If you really like the layout of WELOC, I would suggest a different text called Introduction to Latin by Susan Schelmerdine. And that again, that's Introduction to Latin by Susan Schelmerdine. Same approach as WELOC in that it's parts to whole. She uses Latin literature, but she writes in what she calls a student vernacular, and I think that's a very apt description because students can understand the English instruction a lot better. It makes a lot more sense. It's not quite as lofty as WELOC is. And she has a lot of wonderful grammatical exercises, and she has a stellar student website. It is fantastic, especially for those of you who are doing homeschool co-ops or university model. Fantastic, because you can go to the website, which, by the way, is Leaky Roof Productions. That cracks me up. Leaky Roof Productions. Yes, like your roof is leaking. And she has a series of exercises for every single chapter. Conjugation worksheets, translation sentences, crossword puzzles, all fill-in-the-blank type stuff. And then you hit the check button, and it tells the student what you got right, what you got wrong. And there's even a hint button, too, if they get stuck. So it's a really great resource. But again, I wouldn't even use Introduction to Latin for younger than high school. Maybe middle school, depending upon the teacher, if you have a teacher that can help navigate through that. As I said before, inductive demands logic skills that most grammar school students just do not yet have. So I really caution against using an inductive curriculum for grammar school students. Even if you use inductive in a middle school or high school setting, can you please just imagine me right now in your mind's eye, because I'm not going to do it in front of everybody, falling down in front of you, clasping your knees in the ancient style of a suppliant, and begging you, imploring you, to please supplement the grammar. A lot of these inductive and immersive type books are very weak on grammar. They're so focused on reading as quickly as possible that they don't always get the grammar well grounded. And while that might work okay for the stories in their book, which tend to be about families and their vacations and their kids acting like little brats occasionally, when they get to Latin literature, there's going to be a stumbling block. When you encounter a Ciceronian sentence that's half a page long with a whole bunch of subordinate clauses, you need to have something to fall back on. They need to be able to understand, okay, go find the verb and the subject and the direct object. Yes, we want them to read as fluid as possible, but there's always going to be a place. Look, Shakespeare still stumps us sometimes. Of course they're going to get stuck on some of these higher pieces of Latin literature. So please supplement the grammar if you're using that kind of an approach. The last point in choosing a curriculum is integrative opportunities. I love integration. For me, that's actually what caught my attention with Latin. I actually studied Latin starting in seventh grade because my mother made me. It was a public school. I had a choice. No, my mother made me, and I was really disappointed. But she's laughing now, and I think God is too, very, very hard. What really excited me about Latin was beginning to study the civilization and the history and the culture and the readings that we did and beginning to realize what an amazing group of people these Romans were. And I find that for my students, that's the same magnet for the course. They really enjoy studying the Romans, hearing their stories, learning their culture. They enjoy seeing how their Latin study connects to history, connects to science, connects to literature, connects to everything. I have students all the time go on field trips and come back, Mrs. Moore, we found a Latin inscription. And they're so excited because they see it and they can read it. So anytime you have the opportunity to integrate your Latin class with something else, please don't be a slave to the schedule that says, I can't take 5 minutes and do that. You know, it can be as simple as a warm-up. I often write a Latin science word. For example, in fifth grade, they study anatomy. I write patella on the board. And I say, okay, I want y'all to take a few minutes and figure out what a patella is. Here's a skeleton. What would the patella be on this skeleton? Well, patella means small dish. And it is your kneecap because it looks like a small dish. So even one word. Or as they get older, mottos. Mottos are wonderful. 25 of our 50 states have Latin mottos. There are all sorts of nations that have great, great mottos. I think my favorite is Bermuda, quo fata ferunt, whither the fates carry us. Doesn't that sound mysterious and foreboding? And actually, their shield that has that quote on it is reminiscent of Virgil's Aeneid. So, major integrative opportunities with Bermuda and Latin. Who knew? So take time to find a curriculum that either has that and builds that in. There are curricula that do that. Or help equip your Latin teacher to do that. And that's not all on the Latin teacher, by the way. Okay, the Latin teacher is not going to be your curriculum expert in most cases. Talk. Science teacher, talk to Latin teacher, talk to history teacher. Talk about the different things you can bring in, and you'll be amazed at what you can find to integrate books. 1 year in sixth grade, they were studying westward expansion. And I thought, oh, great. How am I going to integrate Latin with westward expansion? Well, we took the song Home on the Range and translated it into Latin. And it was a study in meter and poetry as well as vocabulary. And they actually went to a Latin convention and sang it with cowboy hats, guitars, and a really great Texas twang. And they won first place. It was great. So, love integration. All right, let's look at this last section, common challenges. This is the biggie. This is where most of my questions come from, is the frantic teacher administrator who says, how do I deal with this one? And the three most common questions I receive are integrating new students, maintaining parental support, and maintaining student interest. I'll start with integrating new students first because it's going to take a little bit longer than the other two. This is a great problem. In fact, don't even call it a problem. Call it a challenge. It's a great challenge to have because it means we're growing, and that is a good thing. Not just because of finances, but because we're furthering our mission. We're reaching more families, and that's an exciting thing to happen. If a student, again, we begin in third grade. So if a student misses third grade and is coming into fourth grade, we use the Latin for Children series, and I take the book and I condense it into a summer syllabus. This is easy to do because this book, one of the beauties of it is that it takes a nice leisurely pace, and so really two chapters are used for each new chart, each new concept. So it's easy for me to condense it. I also know that the Primer B text in fourth grade does a lot of review of what's in the Primer A text. So I know in the Primer A text what is essential, what do they must know before they come in fourth grade. And I condense that into a summer syllabus that they have to complete over the summer. And then in fourth grade, when they come in, we make an appointment every week. A lot of our teachers offer tutorials at least once a week. So we just say, okay, Bobby, you're new. You're going to come to my room every Tuesday afternoon just so we can do a checkup. We're just going to kind of go over what homework you've done this week, what you're learning, make sure that you understand it. Because 9 times out of 10, these students are not going to come say, hello, I'm struggling. They're going to need you to reach out to them. Now, this summer syllabus can be accomplished in a number of ways. There are a lot of parents out there who are gung-ho parents and happy to homeschool their kids. And if they want to do that, more power to you, go ahead. The curriculum that we use happens to be written for homeschool families as well as small classical schools, so it works well for that. We also have teachers who summer tutor. We even use our upper-level students. If you can make a 5 on the AP Latin exam, I think you can tutor third grade Latin. And it looks a lot better on your resume than flipping burgers at McDonald's. So we have a lot of students who do that. And it's nice because then the little kids come in knowing some of the big kids. And that really helps them acclimate to the school and feel accepted. If a student comes in fifth grade, thereby skipping third and fourth, I do not have them do 2 years of Latin in the summer. I think that borders on child abuse. In fact, I'm sure it's on CPS's list somewhere, you know, watching for this. Those classical people shoving Latin down their throats in the summer. So what we do is we have them do the third grade Latin syllabus. And then when they come into fifth grade, we do something that we call introduction to Latin. The third grade syllabus really helps them essentially get over the culture shock that Latin is not English. It has these weird things called declensions and conjugations. And it helps them go ahead and start memorizing some of those so that when they come into fifth grade, they know a few secret handshakes. But then in fifth grade, I do what I call introduction to Latin, which means I hold them responsible for all the vocabulary and the grammar chart for every chapter. They must memorize that. They are going to be tested on that like everybody else. but I don't hold them accountable up front for the translation. In the first few weeks, I might give them a few extra conjugation charts or parsing worksheets to help reinforce that. And as soon as I see that their grammar skills are becoming pretty confident, then I let them start partnering with other students for the translation exercises. So Bobby is new. Bobby, I want you to go sit with Joe, and I want you to work on sentences. You can help him look up words. Joe, I want you to talk through this with Bobby. So not only is Bobby hearing me talk about it, but he's going to partner with someone else to read sentences and stories. And then I use a lot of review in my classroom. I'm constantly going back over the homework as a class. So then I'm walking through the sentences or the story, and Bobby's hearing that. And usually by the end of the year, Bobby is just as proficient as everybody else. The other thing that we do is in sixth grade, we essentially start back at square one with Latin. And this is not only good for Bobby, who's just come in fifth grade and might not be the strongest Latin student, but it's good for students who are coming into sixth grade. Here's what happens. We've completed a grammar school series that is written for grammar school kids with grammar school learning and brains and mind, and we transition into the Latin Alive text series, which is going to explore grammar on a greater depth than we did in grammar school. Just like you're not going to teach history the same way. You teach the same history. We go back and we cover the Founding Fathers and the Revolutionary War in fifth grade. We touched on it in first grade someplace. But when we get into sixth grade, we're going to go back over it, and we're not going to teach it the same way. We're going to talk about greater details, larger themes. Same thing with sixth grade. Instead of talking about general prepositions, and some take the accusative and some take the ablative, we're going to talk about place to which, place from which, accompaniment, manner. So same concept, deeper level, also a lot more reading. So the veteran students are not going to be bored because they're still learning new aspects of the grammar they've seen before. They're reading a whole lot more than they ever have before. But the new student has an intense Latin 1 course. Now, I still ask them to come to my room once a week so that I can check up with them. And I tell them, you're going to have to work extra hard. And know that you're working harder than the student next to you. And that's okay because you're new. And we're going to team with you. We're going to help you. We're going to partner with you. If they come in after sixth grade, it gets a little bit more tricky because then their classmates are really well past them. The ambitious student might try to do a summer class, but oftentimes we simply do independent studies. There are not really that many students who end up coming into our schools in the upper grades. It's usually one or two a year, so this is not terribly difficult to do, and I usually structure an independent study with them, even within the context of another class, where I might spend one day with the class, the next day with the independent study, and go back and forth that way. And that's been the best way. Ideally, if we get big enough one day, we'd love to have a two-track system where seventh grade starts over at Latin 1, and there's a separate track for those students. But you have to have the size, the income, the staffing to be able to accomplish that. So for those of us who are still on a smaller scale, an independent study in your class works well. Maintaining parental support. We must continually educate our parents about the importance and benefit of Latin study. So many times you have parents come in and say, well, why aren't we studying a dead language anyway? Why don't we study something relevant like Spanish? Well, first of all, the Spaniards totally ripped off their language from the Romans anyway. So, put it in context. I say that with love because one of my best friends is a Spanish teacher at our school, and I do appreciate Spanish. But continually educate your parents. Don't ever feel like you can stop doing that. Board members change. New parents come in. Continually be educating them. How do you do that? Well, it's not about putting them down and lecturing to them because that's not going to happen. It's about letting them see, feel, experience the benefits of Latin, partially through integrative studies. Let them see how their kids already understand half the periodic table because it comes from Latin, or the bones of the body. In the grammar school, that's very easily done. Our top ERB score in grammar school is vocabulary, and I really believe that's because of our Latin program and because of the connections they're making, and their vocabulary is expanding. So let them see and feel those things early on. As they get older and they start reading, I keep a newsletter, and I'm constantly telling parents, guess what we're reading this week? We're going to read Pliny talk about the destruction of Pompeii and the eruption of Vesuvius. Or You know, the kids just finished reading The Bondage of the Will in their humanities class. We're going to start reading the 95 Theses next week and let them see those connections, let them feel those connections. Or we're reading Hannibal's War, the story of Hannibal. And so this week we're going to read his speech in Latin as Livy wrote it. So let them see and feel these connections and feel your excitement. AP and SAT scores also are a very good indicator. There's the SAT, typical SAT they take. There's also the SAT subject test for Latin. There's the advanced placement test for Latin. If the younger parents start seeing the older students earn these top scores, earn college credit, see the benefits that they're reaping, oh, that's why we're going to study for Latin for 6 years. Okay, I get it. This is good. This is a good thing. So continually educate them. Moreover, let them just see the cool fun and excitement the kids have. And we're going to get to that in a second. But let them see and feel that Latin is really a part of the culture of your school. It's not something you have to do. Get rid of that mentality. It's something you want to do because it is just so incredibly awesome. The last one is maintaining student interest. A lot of parents come to you and say, help me help you. I'm fighting the battle at home about why we study Latin. It'd be a lot easier if you would just get my kid excited about Latin. Amen? Yes. So keep Latin relevant to the students. Some of their favorite opportunities in the grammar school, one is reading. But after they've been reading a while, I've often had some of them come to me and say that their Latin and science lessons or the mottos and the history behind them are some of their favorite parts because they're seeing the Latin connect to other things. Let Latin be the key to a treasure box that unlocks a whole lot of secrets and opportunities for your students. And they're going to grasp that. They're going to catch that excitement. Provide readings that relate to what they're studying. As I said earlier, just finished ninth grade, they had read The Bondage of the Will in eighth grade. So when we got to Luther, they were really excited to get the opportunity to read more of him and begin to see what he wrestled with and where he was. Because it's a very interesting glimpse. It's not Luther the Reformer in the 95 Theses. He hadn't gone that far down the road yet. And so it's really interesting to see his thought process and what he's wrestling with. Or C.S. Lewis. We read the Chronicles of Narnia. We read the Space Trilogy. We read Till We Have Faces. So they read a Latin letter that C.S. Lewis wrote during World War II, talking about Hitler. And he wrote the letter in Latin because he was corresponding with an Italian priest. Lewis didn't speak Italian. The priest didn't speak English. But being the cool cats they both were, they both spoke Latin. And they went a correspondence for years. They were very excited to get to read something that Lewis, who's not the ancient dead dusty guy, he's a modern dead guy. And so he's part of our age, our period, and yet he's using Latin. And really interesting thoughts that he captured in Latin. Another thing that we did for fun towards the end of the year was we read Dr. Seuss's Green Eggs and Ham, the Latin translation of it. Well, the first grade has a big Dr. Seuss day. So our older kids read Dr. Seuss in Latin to our younger kids. The younger kids were so excited to see that. The cool big kids are coming down to spend time with us, and they're showing us how Latin is fun and exciting, and it relates to Dr. Seuss. So keeping that vibrancy, that fun, that interest alive, and letting your older students share it with your younger students, who are probably sharing it with their parents. So you have this nice circle of excitement and enthusiasm in building your Latin program. The last thing that we use to maintain student interest is an external motivator, our Latin club. And it's going to be very difficult for me to talk about our Latin club in 5 minutes, but I'm going to try. And please talk to me later if it's something of interest to you. We have a Latin club at Grace Academy, which is a chapter of the Junior Classical League. The Junior Classical League is an organization worldwide of 50,000 plus members, the largest organization of its kind, and its purpose is to promote classical study, particularly Latin, in secondary schools. So each year they have conventions on the state and national level. And Texas is so big that we have area conventions as well. And these conventions provide students the opportunity to compete in Latin. Now, if your kids are anything like mine, you just breathe the word competition almost silently, and they immediately sit up straight, perk up, what? I can compete, I can win at something? Oh, yes, you can. And I love JCL because it has something for everybody. There are vocal competitions where we did the Home on the Range song, costume, art of all kinds, mosaics, three-dimensional, drawing, polychromatic, monochromatic, oils, acrylics, anything for your artists. There are drama competitions, oratory, dramatic interpretation competitions where they have to memorize an ancient speech from Cicero or a passage from the Aeneid and perform it in Latin with dramatic flair. There are academic competitions in history, grammar, vocabulary. So there's something for everyone. And while it does not drive my program because it's not my telos, it complements my telos because it's exciting them about the study of grammar. It's showing them the integrative opportunities. They need to read the Latin literature in its original language and sometimes in translation to do well on these competitions. And a competition can motivate them so much more than a report card grade can. And it's a great source of unity. I have to tell you very quickly that when we first started our JCL Latin Club, we were not big enough for any kind of athletic team of any shape or form. So Latin Club was our athletic team, if you will. It was a mental athletic team. It was our first competitive sport. And it became a spirit builder. It brought a sense of unity and camaraderie to our school that only those team-type sports can. And to this day, our Latin Club pep rallies are the best pep rallies. I just have to tell you, they are pretty crazy. So this Latin Club has been a great source of external motivation. And it goes beyond a convention. In November, we put together an architecture project where we build an entirely edible construction replica of something like Hadrian's Wall or the Colosseum. In December, we learn Latin hymns, and we go caroling throughout the neighborhood and then have a hot cocoa wassail party at someone's house afterwards. Service projects, Latin Club t-shirts. We want to be in uniform, so let them create their own Latin Club t-shirt. And let me tell you the fashion trend. We have siblings, not even in kindergarten yet, the preschoolers who beg their parents for a Latin Club t-shirt because it is the fashion standard in Georgetown, Texas. So again, having this outside source of not for the sake of the book, not for the sake of the report card, but for the sake of enjoying classics, let's come together. And this has been a fantastic external motivator. But again, all of it goes back towards the telos, the finis. What is it that I want to accomplish? I want them to read Latin literature and to even enjoy it, to see the fruit of their labors of grammatical study and begin to take the wisdom and the style and the many beautiful lessons from the ancients and from the medieval period and from the Neo-Latin period that they can take and use that to carry on in whatever they should choose to study afterwards. Again, I'm at the Classical Academic Press booth, so if any of you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to talk your ear off throughout the day. Thank you very much.